There's a reason why social media companies engineered things that way. There's a human preference for, you know, that dopamine response is a thing. So you can either complain about it or you can leverage it to try to be more effective.
This is Digital Marketer.
Everyone, this is Mark DeGrasse, the president of Digital Marketer, and this is the podcast that keeps you up to date on everything you need to know when it comes to digital marketing, from the flat learns you need to be focused on to the cutting-edge tactics and tools that are working today. Today, our guest is Toby Brooks, a professor at Texas Tech, and we were just discussing imposter syndrome and how it kind of pops up in surprising places, but it's never uncommon in marketing because everything changes all the time, so we end up feeling like imposters while we figure it out. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, I asked you the same question I ask everyone who comes on the show, you know, what's the hot topic right now? And you instantly went to imposter syndrome. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good topic. Let's discuss. So what are you seeing so far?
So my show is now just over a year old and it's called Becoming Undone. And I really look at high achievers from all different areas. It started as athletes and it's kind of morphed into entrepreneurs. It's morphed into artists. And so we see that these seasons in life can sometimes, by our choice, come to an end, but sometimes doors just get slammed in our face. And so it's been amazing for me to really see the trends emerge, that it doesn't matter if you were an Olympic athlete or an entrepreneur or someone who's got Grammys on the shelf, like everyone deals with the doubt that can creep in those moments of uncertainty. And so I've really grown from that. And it's been empowering for me to hear from people that I admire and esteem as awesome high achievers, yourself included. There's strength in knowing that those people don't always have it figured out either. And figuring out a way, it's like the Stoics say that the obstacle is the way, right? Like if you understand that life is about obstacles, then when you face them, you're not caught off guard. You just recognize, you know, over, around, or through.
Oh, I love that. Well, and I love, you know, Stoic principles and, you know, being in the moment and saying, hey, here's what I know now. Here's what I could do right now. And that is good enough. Well, it's not good enough. It's just what's possible. It's just what you could do. And I think for, you know, for everyone, you know, I actually just released a magazine and one of the articles is called AI is coming for your job eventually. I wanted to not scare people too much, but the fact of the matter is that there's a good possibility that AI is going to become advanced enough to do a lot of what we currently do as like white collar workers here in America. And personally, I know dozens of executives who have recently been let go. Like it's the transition is starting to happen. And what you're going to have is it's a different job market because it's not just going to be like, hey, you lost your job, go down the street, get another job. It's like, no, some departments just might not exist anymore. And you might be a professional who's been in that department for 15 years and maybe the executive in charge of that department. And now we don't need that anymore. So there's a lot of people that are going to have to come into, you know, the realization that what they built their skill on is just gone and you need to start from scratch. So in that case, how would you say to those, you know, experienced professionals that now have to start over, how could they kind of navigate the imposter syndrome they're going to feel?
It's a great question. I had a guest on by the name of Rich Devinney. He's a former Navy SEAL, retired, and he's got a book called The Attributes. And Rich talks about how later in his career, he was responsible for helping select who made it into that highly elite, into the selection process. And what they found was it wasn't necessarily, you know, world-class athletes. It wasn't necessarily individuals who had it all figured out. It was grit, it was resilience, and what he identified as these core attributes. And skill is temporary. It's malleable. It's something that we can rely probably too heavily on from time to time. And so like a CEO that really has, you know, they've really drilled down and they understand the nuance of their business, they're highly skilled. But the question is, do they have the attributes? So that it's just like scaling a business. Can I take the attributes that led me to success in that setting, decontextualize it and turn it into success in another? And the whole AI thing, I mean, people are running around like their hair's on fire in higher education, worried to death about how how are we going to grade these student papers? And there's like this fear. I think South Park actually made light of it. Like, AI is generating the papers, and then the teachers are having AI grade the papers, and nobody's doing anything. It's just AI communicating with itself. But it's a tool, right? And we are a tool-making people. And, you know, I don't lament the days of yesterday when there were switchboard operators connecting the phone. We figured out a way to make that a more efficient tool. And now our ability to communicate is much more efficient, and it gives us time to do other things. And so I feel like there are two groups of people in this debate. There are people that are terrified of AI, and then there are people that are running full steam ahead into it to figure out what this awesome tool is going to allow me to do next. And I would certainly hope that I'm in the latter.
Yeah, well, I think you are, you know, even just discussing it like, hey, this is a thing, you know, it's just like I usually compare it to like CAD design development, where it's like, okay, engineers used to sit down on a table and grab their compass and, you know, actually draw these things. It would take a million people a million hours. Then they got CAD and now they could design anything they want. It didn't make them less valuable. It actually made them, every individual became a million times more valuable because now one person could do the work of 50 people before. So, and, you know, I think that's great perspective, because if you just see it like, oh, here's another cool thing you can do. And for the most part, this is one of the best ones ever, because it's like $10 a month. You know, it's not some huge barrier. And now everybody kind of expects it. But I do love how you mentioned the education side, too, because everybody, I get two arguments. It's usually AI is not going to do anything to education. Education can remain the same. And then there's, I don't even know what the other one is. Education is not necessary anymore. So there's like those two extremes. But I always tell people, I'm like, it has to be incorporated, because honestly, who cares about grading somebody's paper and seeing if, you know, they could read some things and follow the rules of the paper and write the paper, whatever it is. You want the ideas and the understanding. And honestly, you know, for me, I was like, how do you combat that? And my idea was, like, you're going to have to present the information. Like, that's the next level of papers, is presenting the information so you can show your understanding. So
I think that's where the fear comes in, is, and maybe even the imposter syndrome. Like, it's easy for me to blow off the dust from the PowerPoint that I delivered last year, but am I really delivering value? Am I teaching students not just what to know, but how to think? And so I'm a one-man show with my podcast. I use AI to do a number of different things. The transcription, I will use Descript to kind of filter out a lot of the ums and ahs. So there's multiple tools that I use. And what I found is, in learning how to use those tools for my podcast that I do in my spare time, I've now got tools that I can share with my students that can help them. So as they're studying for a massive board exam, if they've got a chapter, they write up a summary of that chapter and then plug it into ChatGPT with a couple of prompts, and they've got 50 sample test questions that they can study from. You know, there are a number of strategies that you can use. Some of them are free, some of them are dirt cheap, but it really is just the creativity that you can have in this process is really kind of limitless. For me, it's trying things out and then interacting with folks like you that are on that cutting edge so that I get those great ideas to try out. Some of them work, some of them won't, but it's this iterative growth process.
I love that. Well, and back to when we were kind of talking about the one-to-one, how you could be one-to-one these days, my whole concept for the future of education is going to be that teachers essentially provide the lesson. Like, they provide the meat, like the core thing you're supposed to learn. Then AI actually takes that, applies it to something that the student's actually interested in, and then teaches it using analogies of the thing that somebody knows a lot about. So like, my son loves baseball. Okay, let's take this complex topic, turn into baseball analogies, and now he's interested, he remembers, and everybody wins. Actually, the teacher will have less work, because it won't be less work. It'll be more time to focus on what's the core lesson that needs to be taught to provide the understanding that the course is supposed to teach. So do you think that's possible, or how do you see it being used?
No, absolutely. I think it is. And I also recognize that my students learn in ways different than I did. They interacted with technology earlier and more vast technology than I had. I'll give you an example. There's a tool I use that created a voice print for me. You just read like a paragraph and it creates a voice print. So I can create lecture note summaries. And then all I do is paste that text in, and it will generate an MP4 in my voice, like I'm speaking. So when they're on a treadmill or an elliptical working out, they can hear me narrating the notes for the chapter, and I didn't have to spend the time to record it. Blows my mind away. But the students today have expectations. You know, just having a dusty old textbook is not how they learn best. And I've experimented with this for myself. Complementary methods. So I can read it, but if I'm hearing it while I'm reading it, I'm much more likely to retain it than if it were one mode or the other. And what we see here as well is if I have a student with a learning disability or a student that comes from a different socioeconomic or different ethnic background than me, this really tears down a lot of those differences because I'm providing the same materials in multiple different forms. And that's by definition what accessibility is. By making it more accessible, I'm helping all my students, and it really can be pretty transformative.
Man, that's a fantastic use of that. I never even, you know, because I do use Descript for that function too. So you create your own voice. And did you do the process of reading it for, originally when I did it was a long time. You had to read something for like 20 minutes or.
It's much shorter. The one that I created was literally a paragraph. Now it's not perfect, but it sounds pretty close to me. And it's better than some of the other, you know, the old school script to audio readers. It just adds kind of a personal touch that I feel like students appreciate. They understand that you're not just trying to teach me using the old projector. You're trying to be on the cutting edge and provide me things that really serve me, like we were talking with the one-on-one.
I love that.
Hey everyone, I wanted to quickly interrupt the podcast for a special announcement. If you're listening to this podcast because you want to become a better marketer, then I want to share with you what I believe to be the most comprehensive digital marketing program on the market today. It's called the Digital Marketing Mastery Certification. You'll learn to leverage the tools and channels to predictably and profitably drive awareness, leads, sales, and referrals. Everything you need to know to become a true master of digital marketing. We'll take an in-depth look at the core digital marketing competencies, including content, email, social media, community, digital advertising, data and optimization, and more. After earning your digital marketing strategist certificate, you'll have the tools to effectively reach your target audience through a full scope marketing strategy. Get started today at digitalmarketer.com/strategycert.
Well, and it's kind of funny because sometimes I look at the younger generation, I'm like, man, you guys are really demanding, because I used to just, hey, here's what you're given, like you do your best with it. But then on the flip side, I'm like, no, if you're really, you know, we always talk in marketing about customer centric, like we think of the customer first, like what do they want? What do they need? Then I have to provide you with, hey, you like video? Here's video. Hey, you like audio? Here's audio. Hey, I like reading a book or a magazine or whatever it is. Here you go. Here's the written materials. But thanks to AI, you can actually do it all, which I don't think was possible. Because do you on HeyGen, their platform, you actually create an avatar of yourself where like you do a video, like you talk to the camera for 2 minutes. Have you tried that?
I have not tried that.
Oh, okay. Give that a shot. I would love to know, because I've tried it a few times. It's not perfect, but essentially what you do is you just say whatever you want to the camera. They have guidelines in terms of don't move your hands a lot, which is hard for me because I use my hands for everything. But you just record yourself for 2 minutes, and it'll create an avatar of you. And then now you can plug in your text, and then you say in your voice whatever the text was.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. I'm using a new tool now called Opus Clip that will generate shorts out of an entire, I'm using it for interviews as a way to market via social media. But as I'm doing it, I'm like, my son's a senior in high school. He looks at TikTok a lot. And, you know, short form video is, you know, the dopamine and it's everything. But we don't teach that way. I have a lab this semester that's 4 hours long. And my students are used to consuming information in 5 to 10 minute snippets. And I expect them to pay attention for 4 hours. So providing them with short form video is kind of where I'm heading next with this. Not to, you know, cater to their every whim, but I also understand that there's a reason why social media companies engineered things that way. There's a human preference for, you know, that dopamine response is a thing. So you can either complain about it or you can leverage it to try to be more effective.
Man, that is genius. I love that idea, because I've never even, because, you know, whenever I thought about long form content generation, I think of like, oh, hey, you get the thing too. And it's really just to pull people into the long form content, but it's all for marketing purposes, for learning purposes. That makes so much sense, because then you get people interested in the topic, even if the 4-hour version is kind of, you know, tedious, be honest about it. But saying, hey, no, you're going to get to this piece, and then you create some short form just to get people interested in the content, remembering the content. And honestly, it'll probably help with the testing too, because they'll think like, oh yeah, that was part 4 of, you know, my professor's TikTok series.
And the thing is, 5 years ago, the thought of producing that kind of content for me, like, I don't have time. I might be able to record it, but I'm sure not going to cut it and edit it and caption it and maybe even add, you know, whatever kind of flair or sizzle that I want to add to it. I don't have to anymore. Again, I can use that tool, leverage it. It might not be perfect, but it's still iterating to their preference. It's building toward the way that they prefer to learn. And I think that you're foolish if you don't try to use that tool.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, at the end of the day, as a professor or a teacher or any kind of educator, you know, your goal is for them to understand the material, not to pass a test, not to get an A or not fail or whatever it is. It's to learn the thing so that they could ideally use it and create more ideas and do more cool things. So however you need to deliver that, like, that's how you should deliver that. And now you can't.
And that's the coolest part, is this isn't instead of those other things. It's, if I can record the lesson, then AI can allow me to chop it up, parse it up, produce it in 3 or 4 different forms so that whatever that student finds works best for them, that's what they use. And they can ignore the rest because in many ways it's, I won't say it's duplicate content, but it's parallel streams of content.
Yes. Well, and honestly, just from a marketing perspective, the more touches, the more impressions you could get for whatever you're trying to sell, the more likely somebody is to remember it, recall it when they actually want to purchase the item and do all these different things. Like, you know, they say like, oh, 11 or 7 or 20 impressions. But I'm like, no, it's more like Kasim Aslam, he always says 500. He says 500 impressions. That's how many times you need to hit somebody before they actually start to see something. I'm like, ah, that's pretty accurate. So yeah, as a teacher, you just hit them over the head with it over and over again, and you're good to go. Now, on the educational front, I know the testing, like you said, is a huge concern for educators. How do you see that progressing for, you know, let's go with the paper writing, because that's the one everybody quotes. Like, how do you know if it's written? Honestly, and one of the biggest things, I always tell people this, it's if you're checking AI with AI, and it was actually written by a person, but that person's syntax and grammar and everything is really good, like they're just really technically proficient at writing, it'll get flagged as AI. So even that's not a good indicator. So how do people get around, you know, testing people's knowledge?
Yeah. So what I've chosen to do is install checkpoints along the way. So there are milestones for the papers in my project. And I haven't yet, but I think for the summer term and moving forward, I will actually have, because I know they're probably going to use AI, I may actually even make it part of the assignment. Like, here's a prompt, and I want you to, for the first milepost, maybe in the second week of the class, provide me with what ChatGPT spit out for this prompt for your topic. And now I can see what it was. Okay. And then from there, okay, start editing it. And here's maybe some other prompts to add. So we're kind of layering on top of it so that they know all along that I knew they used AI. I wanted them to use AI, because increasingly that's where they're going to turn. And then from there, again, it's a tool. I can use my fist to drive a nail in a piece of wood, but if I've got a hammer, it's going to be more efficient. So use that tool to start to maybe narrow your focus and niche down your topic. And then that's hopefully where your own impression or your own spin or take really can take root. And then obviously they're going to cite sources. And there are some things that the current ChatGPT doesn't do very well. We've come across some instances where references that it cited don't even exist.
The stats.
Yeah. And so there are some checkpoints and some mileposts along the way that can help them know that you're looking. And subsequently, as a result, they don't feel like they're criminals sneaking around in the dark trying to use this tool. We're trying to equip them to use it as best as they can.
Love that. That's a fantastic perspective. Because, well, even in the workplace, like if I have an employee and they're saying, like, I used AI to generate this, I'll be like, I don't care. Is it good? You know, if it's good, then you did a good job. If it's not good, then whether it's human made or AI made, it's still bad. And it doesn't matter that you got the job done. It's just bad work. So you need to do it right. So I love that perspective. And from a research standpoint, you know, that's one of the best uses of it. And for that, I usually go to illicit.org. That's my official like AI research tool, because it only accesses research papers. And so you know the data is going to be, you know, supported by something versus like ChatGPT will tell you too. It'll say like, this is an example of some information that would support your argument. And you're like, wait, an example? Why don't you just give me the information? So it is a lot of work. And at this point, you know, GPT actually used to be better. You know, back when I started using it, you know, last year up until like April, man, it would crank out. You could ask it for like a novel and it would produce like this amazing piece. And now it's like you ask for, you know, an article or something, it spits out like 500 words, like student just got the assignment and it was due or didn't do the assignment and it's due in like 30 minutes. And that's what GPT's putting out now. So do you actually have like a formula that you use to say like this is the proper use of AI or like principles of AI use?
We just added a generative AI statement to our syllabi across our department. And it's up to the professor of each individual course, how much or how little, whether it's forbidden. But our policy is just that we're going to tell you up front whether or not we allow it. And if we do allow it, it's built into the rubric so that you know, you're not going to lose points if you used it, if we expected you to. So we're just trying to kind of get to consensus so that students at the very least know what to expect in a given course. I think ideally in the future, there will be a more of a universal consensus statement so that students, I don't know if I'm in Dr. DeGrasse's class, I have to do this. If I'm in Brooks's, I have to do that. It would just be much better for the student experience if we had kind of a common expectation, but it's so new and it changes almost by the week that we're just not there yet. But I think we're headed in that direction.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, and that's really progressive. So, you know, kudos to the organization for realizing that and not being like, we're going to stop this tomfoolery.
Yeah, you're gonna turn all your papers in handwritten.
Yeah, like what are you gonna do? And then the teachers still have to grade it. So you just added like a pile of work onto the staff, and honestly, in the workplace, you know, like I was saying, like I don't care whether somebody that works for me uses AI as long as the content is good. Content being good is good, and nothing and everything else is bad. So do whatever you want to do and get it done. But that's fantastic. Now, for the prompting specifically, for just how you do it, do you have like a specific methodology between?
I haven't yet, but as I said, I think moving forward, as I've had several projects that have lived in specific courses for a number of years, and I'll update those rubrics annually. But generative AI has finally, I feel like it's gotten to this tipping point where, okay, we either need to use it, forbid it. You can't just ignore it anymore. And so for that purpose, I think it would serve the students well, not just to know prompt, you know, be able to craft certain prompts, but like you said, implicit or GPT, where you go for your AI information can differ even if the prompt is the same. And so we talk about this in our evidence-based practice course a lot, the difference between a database and a search engine. Well, databases are full of information that's been vetted, it's peer reviewed, you know, there's quality assurances associated with databases. Search engines, you can tweak, you can manipulate, and keywords, and there are black hat ways to enhance your standing in search engines. And so I think the parallel to that and kind of the next step is with generative AI, we have to understand that not every tool is exactly the same, and what you put in can very well be vastly different depending on the tool that you're using. So is a short answer to your question, no, not yet, but plan to in subsequent semesters for sure.
Well, I don't even think you're, you know, wrong in waiting, because honestly, it changes all the time. Sometimes all, you know, the same prompts you run like last night, and then you try it again today during a live presentation, and it doesn't do the same thing. And you're like, oh crap, what is this thing? So now it's been so inconsistent that I think probably by the second half of this year, it'll stabilize. And my theory was that all the big guys are essentially, you know, in an arms race, and nobody's actually launched what their thing is capable of yet. They're waiting until somebody else does. And so once they do, then we'll probably see some some crazy stuff happen where it's like, you know, do this for me, make all the things, and that just produces it. Because honestly, it's a great tool for students because it doesn't give you too much. If you don't prompt right, it gives you a bad answer, or just kind of a basic answer, which is not helpful either. And it forces you to actually go through multiple steps to learn. And it's programming, honestly. So
if you're a dystopian, then you're worried about like the Terminator future, you know, the pace at which this thing is, the pace, it's incredible. If you think about how far we've come in just 3 or 4 years, the utopian side, as opposed to the dystopian side, you know, think about all the things we're going to be able to do and the rate at which this thing is learning, or this concept, this idea is, you know, it's what an exciting time to be alive. Like there's never been anything like this in my lifetime. And it's kind of exciting.
That's the thing I compare it to the most is like, you know, people like you and I remember when there was no internet and remember when it got popular and remember when it grew. And it's just like, oh my gosh, you guys have no idea. Cause I remember even back then, cause I think at the time it was getting like, okay, everybody's getting online. I think I was probably I was in college. Yeah. So it had to be around like 2001, 2002. And even back then it was just like, I don't know, you know, this thing might not be around for long. And I'm like, you are 100% wrong. This thing is changing everything. So you got to get on board right now. Otherwise you're going to be behind. But I will tell you, I'll give you one trippy thing for the, you know, the negative people out there, or the people who are thinking Terminator is going to come. If it was going to happen, it has already happened. And if it was going to manipulate all the data, it's already manipulating all the data. So what we might actually be seeing is AI developing itself and releasing itself so we don't all freak out. That's just a crazy theory. But if anybody's wondering, like, if there's going to be a program that could manipulate all information, it's already there. It maybe has been there. You can't do anything about it. Oh, the sun flare is going to fry the planet. Like, yeah, you could stress about that, but it's already going to happen. So it's not going to make a difference. So why don't you just move on with your life, develop, learn, and maybe become a billionaire? Because that's the opportunity right now, is that, you know, the Facebooks, the YouTubes, the Instagrams, this all happened post 2008 disaster. That's when these companies arose and now they're the dominant players. Now we're in the next stage and the dominant players don't actually exist yet. So it could be you, you know, get to work. And it sounds like you're helping students do that. So this is a great discussion. I really appreciate what you're doing with your students, especially, and just your embrace, you know, you embracing AI and this development, I think says a lot about you as a teacher and as a person. And I really appreciate it. So thank you for coming on the show.
I'm a super huge fan of your work and just seeing what you've been able to accomplish over your career, but certainly this most recent iteration, it's inspiring. So I really thank you for the work that you do.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to help people get ahead, because I think it's a huge opportunity. I think everybody could just change their whole lives. We could get rid of all these jobs that everybody hates and is bored with and literally makes movies and TV shows about how much they hate the work that they're doing. So that's all going to be gone. No more boring data entry. It's just not going to be necessary. We're going into the age of creativity and building and making stuff people like. And that's a good thing. I'm tired of getting a watch and having to learn how to use it because the developer didn't have time to make things good. It's like, no, everybody has all the tools. It's not crazy expensive. We could make some neat stuff now and people will take advantage. So thank you for your work.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to hit that follow button so you get notified when all of our new episodes release. Please share this with that friend who's clueless about digital marketing. And don't forget to visit digitalmarketer.com, where you can access all of our certifications, courses, and training programs. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.